We're actually going to look at one verse in the book of Ephesians where Paul is talking about fathers, but I'm going to preach next week on John 13, and I'm going to go through it like I normally would go through a passage, but I actually want to read the first part of John 13 because it sets us up for, I believe, what a father should be. And it's one of these passages that's pretty famous about Jesus' last week, and it's Jesus washing his disciples' feet. Who here has their feet washed regularly by other people? No one? What the heck? I mean, that's weird. You don't have your feet washed by other people? Isn't that an awesome thing, right? Yeah, it's really not. when my boys are running around and they take off their shoes and lie on the couch and put their feet near my nose, I want to... yeah, do something mean, very, very mean to them. But I don't, generally speaking. But this is Jesus in his humility, right? We talk about Jesus' courage and strength and Jesus' humility. And when you think about a father, I think about strength and courage, and I think about humility. And the marriage of the two, to me, are powerful. And so here's Jesus... and he's with his men, he's with his disciples. And it says, John 13, 1, it was just before the Passover feast, or festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress. Of course, that's the Last Supper. And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So, this is amazing, he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now remember, this is a walking society. You wore sandals. It was dirt roads. It was worse than what we have, obviously. And Jesus takes this basin and washes the smelly feet of the disciples that he loved. Imagine if you're one of those disciples. Here's what's Peter. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "You don't understand what I'm here for, Peter. I'm here to seek and to save and to serve the lost. I'm here to bring people unto me. I'm here to love in a way you've never seen before." And I want you to think... I want you to think about fathers. I want you to think about the power, right? The power of a father and the presence of a father. If you were to decide to climb Mount Everest, lots of people want to do this. One of the things that they say you need is a Sherpa, right? A Sherpa. And a Sherpa is someone who lives in the forest right near Mount Everest is mountains there. And Sherpas have, whereas we would begin to feel the oxygen rate get smaller at 8,000 feet, they don't feel it until 20,000 feet. And these Sherpas, you would hire them, and these Sherpas would then, not only do they have this great capacity to function without a lot of oxygen, is they know the mountain. And they know where to take you. Because not only do they know how to protect your life, they know where the vistas are, right? They know where the most beautiful outlooks are. Hey, we need to go here. You need to be careful here because we're hitting this oxygen level. And my body can withstand it, but yours can't, right? I don't want you to miss out because we're going to take this left here. I don't want you to miss out on this view. You have to see that. It's too beautiful not to see. And we're going to walk over here, and I need you to be careful because you're not going to realize it, but we're going to be really, really close to the edge, and you can't see it, but we are. because I've been here before. And as I read about these Sherpas, I thought, man, that's a dad. Like every explorer needs a Sherpa. And I think to myself, every kid needs a dad. And Paul knew that. And in the book of Ephesians, he writes to these relationships. And I'm just going to take one verse, and I'm going to pull out three things for us this morning. One verse, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. And he's trying to tell the fathers, fathers, look, here's what I need you to do. Because there's a dynamic in the home that you need to be very careful and you need to be cognizant of. Because it drives a lot of what happens in your living rooms, in your hallways, in your kitchens, in your bedrooms. It drives a lot of this. And you need to be aware. And I just want to say, this is for fathers talking about the way in which they parent. I want to say, before we get into this verse, there is all through Ephesians and Colossians this dynamic. God also says to the kids, children, obey your parents, right? Children, you obey your parents because that helps your parents. So kids, when you honor and respect the authority of your parents, it helps them a lot. Because what parents can struggle with is this. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them. I'm going to stop there for 1 second. Is it not easy for fathers in particular to take up a lot of space in a room with their frustration? It's easy when things aren't going right and they want to kind of use their influence to take up a lot of space. And what can happen? When you do that as a father, when it's your words or your nonverbal cues that everybody in your family knows, you take up a lot of room and you can provoke what? You can provoke your kids to anger. You can provoke them to sin. And you're responsible for that. You're responsible for the influence that you have. And Paul knew that this was delicate. Paul knew that this was when you're sitting around the dinner table and you want to have conversation and daddy is not happy, right? I mean, a lot of people say, well, mommy ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right? And daddy ain't happy. It can provoke the kids to anger. And fathers, implicit in this command is, do you know yourself? Because if you're walking in after work, if you're walking in to the dining room table and you're sitting down and you're already on edge, what is that? Paul says, look, you need to know yourself. What is it that's going on inside of you? Do you not understand the influence you have? Because we only got one dad. And when a kid is looking, when you're given the gift of a child, they only have one father. And your voice is the most special voice as far as a male comes into their life. They only have one voice of the father. And when they hear that voice, it means more than any other male voice in their life. And that's beautiful, and God designed it that way. But that power can also be used in a negative way. And Paul knew this. And what was happening was that fathers were angering their kids. And it would provoke them so much that, you know what kids were stopping doing? They stopped obeying their parents. And it was just infighting. And it was a bunch of slam doors, turn up the radio, I don't want to talk to anybody. And that's what was happening in homes. And I think it still happens today. What happens when the voice of the father is so loud that the kids can't hear it anymore? What happens when your dad did that to you? What happened to the temperature of your home? It became dysfunctional. People stopped talking. People just looked around in hypervigilance saying, when's dad coming home? When do I need to? Okay, I know I will not be here during this time, and I will be here during this time. And Paul hates it. He feels like Satan is using the anger and inciting father's anger to take up so much space in the home that the home was no longer a family. It wasn't. And it was breaking down the church at Ephesus. Because the entire book of Ephesians is about unity. What better way to ruin a church's unity than to start by family, home by home? Who are the homes here in Westtown Church? Okay, I'm going to pick apart the dining room table of each individual family. If I can do that, I guarantee you, they will not feel unity here at church. If they're not feeling it at home, they're definitely not going to feel it here. So Paul's like, okay, here's one take. Dads, you gotta look at the anger. And you can't allow that to what? Provoke your kids to anger. Please do not do that. Do not be on them so much. It's like the movie I talked about a couple of weeks ago, the movie Shine with Jeffrey Rush. It's the overbearing, you know, kind of this German father who said, you will learn this piano concerto by Rachmaninoff, and you will have it done perfectly. And the son kind of internalized that, and I tell you what, his whole personality, the joy was sucked out of him. And he would practice and practice, and you could just see joy being sucked out of this son and the weight of the father on him to the point where he became dysfunctional. And Paul is saying, look, fathers, please don't exasperate your kids. So I want you to be a Sherpa, right? I want you to be a Sherpa that will protect them, but also you find the most beautiful vistas and you take them because you don't want them to miss out on beauty. You don't want them to miss out on the joy. You want to protect them and say, I'm going to caution you from this, but I don't want you to miss out on that. I mean, read the book of Proverbs, because the entire book of Proverbs is a father essentially taking a son to the blue light district of the city and saying, look around, right? Look around. There's the ignorant man, the simpleton. There's the shyster, the used car salesman who's going to, you know, say you've got a deal and you don't. Here is the salacious woman, and she will eat you alive if you give yourself to her. And it's a father trying to give wisdom to his son. And so what does he say to the fathers? The prohibition is, please don't exasperate them. But what does he call? What does he call you and I to, fathers? He says what? Bring them up. Right? Bring them up with what? With discipline and instruction, whose root, whose core is from the Lord. That comes from the root being God. Three things I want to pull from this. So watch out for the prohibition, but these three exhortations, rather it says to bring them up. I mean, what does that mean? As a father, you're supposed to bring your son or your daughter up. What does that mean to raise a child? What are we raising them to? What's implicit in that? Let's go to our first slide here. That there's this balance, right? He says, I want you to raise them up. And as you do that, they're going to be 2, and then they're going to be 5, and they're going to be 9, and 14, 16, and they're going to be 18. And there's this balance between independence and dependence that happens in every home. And you have to assess that and make sure they are being raised up. Because what can happen are these two extremes in this balance is where, I went to Florida State, right? And there was nothing like seeing a freshman at Florida State University walk down Tennessee Street. I guess there's not a whole lot of Florida State people here. Because there should be a few like little snickers and laughs right there. Because they called it the Tennessee Waltz. And you do the Tennessee Waltz. And you walk down. And you go to AJ's. And you go to all these different places. I've spent my time at Guthrie's eating a lot of chicken tenders. Way too many chicken tenders right there. And what would happen is they were going to live independently. And if you were to ask a lot of these people, a lot of these students, it's for many of them, it was... And I tell you what, my dad or my mom told me what to do. And they always told me what to do. And you know what they needed me to be? They needed me to be dependent. They needed me to be dependent upon them. And I felt that from my parents. They needed to be in charge and they needed to tell me what to do. For me to be independent at all in my adolescence was bad. And I could tell that. They did not want me making choices because I could tell the father needed to be the father or the mother needed to be the mother so much that independence wasn't allowed. It was when you're at home and you're not 18 yet, you are a dependent upon me. And so what happens many times, boom, you get out into the world. And you're like, I am independent. And I'm going to do and experience all that the world has to offer. And this over-dependence in homes, where you have helicopter moms and dads, right? They come in at every moment saying, no, 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 no. You are a dependent. I need to be helpful. It's about the parent and not the child so many times. It's about the dad needing to have this role, needing a dependent and not raising the child up, right? Raising the child up. So what can happen? So when they come of age, they're set free. We are absolutely set free, and this over-dependence that can happen in homes can absolutely debilitate a child. And then when they get out into the world, they don't know what it means to be on their own. They don't know what it means to do things for themselves. And independence is so new to them that many of them feel either like they go off to the extremes, or they feel they can't do anything because they've been dependent upon their parents their entire life. I need them. And these are the people you see stay with their parents monetarily, financially, relationally, because they don't know how to do life without their parents. No, no, no. Dads, you got to teach your sons and your daughters to be raised up so they can go out, right? And be the messengers and the missionaries with the salt and the light that we're called to bring to the world. Flip it real quick. There are some homes where, it could be a reaction to what they had, a father or mother, maybe you had, and you said, you know what? No, I'm not going to be that parent. I'm not going to be that parent that is overly in my kids' lives. And these are the homes that you see a kid from a very early age become kind of like individualized. They become they're their own person. But you also notice that they're independent throughout, their upbringing. They've almost been independent too long. There is not a dad that is really in their life. He just says, I'm going to provide you some environments, and you go and you define who you are. And these people become very independent. And normally they become very functional by themselves. But how many times do we see when you walk into those homes, man, it's like everyone's an individual. It's like you walk into their room and you notice everyone's always in their room. No one's ever together. Yes, there's a lot of independence, but there is no cohesion, right? There's no connection or love in these families, and that's why it's so hard. Because you give a kid, a certain skill, and you give them some independence, what can happen is they'll go off, hey, I'm my own person. I don't need you anymore. And that's not true. That's not right. That's why this is not easy. This is so hard. What does it mean for me to take my two boys and my two girls and they're individuals and to make sure that we have a bond, right? This cohesion between us, but it isn't this enabled and meshed home that you can't define one person from another and at the same time decide not to be that, but you have a bunch of individuals. What if we had six individuals in the Taylor home and we really weren't connected at all? And Paul says to fathers, I want you to raise them up. I want you to understand what it means for them to be a truly dependent one-year-old. But then it's different when they're four. And it's different when they're nine. And then when you give your kid the first key and you see them get in the car like I had to do last month and say, oh boy, God, what has just happened? What has just happened? And what is happening to my family? Are we becoming disconnected? She just left. And she took my kid with her. They went down to the store. And it feels weird that they don't need me to drive them somewhere. What, is this right? Okay, all right, help me. And so I've been thinking about this dynamic, what does it mean to have a bond and there is some dependence because you need your father and you need your mother. And at the same time, the goal of a father and a mother is to raise a kid up. To raise a kid up so that they can go and be independent, right? I've seen this so many times when that is done well. I like being in those homes because there's a freedom in those homes. When I walk into someone's home that I feel like has this balance right, it's sort of like this honor and respect from both sides. It's like you hear the father talk or the mother talk and the kids are like, okay. And then when the kid talks, you see the nonverbals, and the facial expression of a mother and a father, and they're listening to their kid. And almost like, but you're your own person. Like, what do you think? We're going to honor that. And it's this beautiful, right, give and take that happens when you see a father and a mother raise a child up. This beautiful, dignified balance that's there. So Paul says, I want you to raise the child up. What tools do you use? What do you use to raise them up? It's the next. Let's go back to the verse. Raise them up, bring them up with two things. Discipline and instruction. So if you want to raise the kid up and know that balance, what are the two things you can use and you have to balance? Discipline. If you take the Hebrew word for discipline in the Old Testament, it literally means this: removal of options. You remove options for your kid. When you use discipline, you tell your kid, you don't have any options, this is what you're going to do. I've told you guys this before. If I wanted to play sports, I had to play the piano. There were no options for me. So like, okay, I'm not going to not play sports, so I'm going to play the piano. There was no options for me out of that. I did not have any options. They said, this is going to be the discipline in your life for that. And, you know, dads, when do you use boundaries? When do you tell your kids, you have no options, this is what you're going to do? Because there's a time when you got to use that, obviously. There's a time when you have to say, nope, it's going down this way. But it's the balance between the two. Do you overuse that? You know? I mean, how many times can you say, because I said so? Right? I mean, how many times have you said that in your parenting? Because I said so. You're not going to do this because I... And if you say that too many times, it begins to lose its effect. Or you're overusing that. And so, discipline means, hey, I know my kid doesn't understand it right now, but they need to be disciplined. If you ever read, I've brought this up before, the Time magazine article about the Tiger Mom. She said, I'm going to remove options and have my kid learn their particular instrument. It's not fun for them now. I'm removing options. And the only reason I'm going to do it for the first 10 years of them learning this instrument is because in the 10th year, they're really good at that instrument and it becomes fun. And you only like things that you're good at. And it's going to take for them 10 years to get good at the violin or good at the piano. But I got to discipline them, tell them to shut up and practice. Because in that 10th year, they're going to have so much joy, but they can't see it right now. And that's why I've got to discipline them. And that's what the whole idea is. Discipline your kids, right? In that, you need to watch and sometimes yank them from certain friends. You need to say, you know what? When you're around this group of friends, Frankie, I see you change, right? Jake, when you're around them, Ellie, when you're around them, you become a different person. I'm nervous that these aren't the right type of kids for you. And sometimes you've got to set that boundary and say, this isn't right. But he doesn't say to just use discipline. He says sometimes use instruction or conversation. That word instruction is more like conversation. That's the next question I want to ask you. What type of fathering includes conversation in your home? I mean, true dialogue. When do you sit your kid down and say, hey, this group of kids I've noticed cusses a lot. I've even heard you use words that you normally don't use. Maybe not cuss words, but more stronger language than I've ever heard you use. I want to talk to you about what it means to be with this group of people and to be a Christian son or be a Christian daughter. Why does your mouth change? And what happens? When you offer a dialogue, it gives them ownership. And they say, Dad, you're right. I do a little bit more. But sometimes I kind of like feeling cool. And this is more the cool crowd. And they use a little bit different language. But Dad, I want you to know that I didn't cuss. I maybe used some stronger language. And you know what I've noticed, Dad? I've noticed that when I'm with them, they like being around our home because they feel something secure and solid about it. And you know what I've noticed? They then ask me about youth group. And they've asked me to actually come to youth group. And so, Dad, I know that they have bad language, and I know that you see something different in them. But what I see, Dad, is, yeah, that's true, and I need to be careful. But I'm also seeing God use me in relationships with them So maybe that could be a good thing that I hang out with them some and kind of be a missionary for the Lord. That's good. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. I'm more nervous about you, you know, becoming a person that I don't want you to become. But I didn't realize that this dialogue, this conversation, you've informed me that you're seeing God use you as this little missionary. And then I would say back to them, can you at least hear me say, as your father, I get nervous about you changing and being overly affected by them? Yeah, Dad, I think maybe sometimes I have been, and I need to be careful about that. Yeah, Dad, some of those girls I've never talked with, and I'm a little nervous about that. But I still feel like it's okay right now. Okay. Dad, will you trust me a little bit? Okay. Yeah, I guess I can trust you. I respond back to them. Could we have another follow-up conversation about this, maybe in a month, and see how it's going? Okay, let's do that. And like that instruction and that dialogue, Paul is saying, when you do that, you honor your son and your daughter. You give them dignity. You don't just discipline them. You give them instruction through conversation. And it's beautiful when you honor the way, you know, you could talk to I can talk to my 9-year-old Jake, and the way I can talk to my 16-year-old Ellie is completely different. And you have to respond to the differences of the two, but it's essentially the balance between disciplining and conversating, right? Because if you only are in conversation with your kids, you know what I've seen so many times? It's you want to be their friend. I just want my kid to like me. And if my kid doesn't like me, I'm not somebody. Because you know what? My dad was never even, there was no friendship within my relationship with my dad ever. And I hated that. All it was discipline from my dad. And yeah, I was a disciplined kid, but I had no bond with my dad. And so I want to talk with my kid, Frank. I want to talk with him. I want us to have dialogue. Yeah, that's true. Of course that's true, but Paul says, be careful. Because then when you need to discipline your kid, you're not going to want to if he's your friend. And those of you that only discipline, you need to be careful if you only use discipline, because there may be no bond with your kid, and you need to have a ton more conversations rather than just telling them what they need to do. And you know what? Like the balance between raising a kid up, this is so tough. This is so hard. And a big key in this, and I'll go back to John Calvin, who started one of the fathers of our denomination, Presbyterianism. He said this: before you come to the Bible, you got to know yourself. You got to know how you were raised when you read this passage of Scripture. You got to know your hurts and where you've been burned or maybe abused. So you can read this and not say, okay, I'm only going to discipline, or I'm only going to have a conversation with my kid, or I need my kid to be dependent, or I was in one of those families that was way too close. We were way too enmeshed. And dadgummit, that's not going to happen to my family. So I need to teach my kid independence. And this is hard. But you know what? I tell you what, if you fight for this, if you fight for this balance, it's beautiful. And I'll tell you why in one second. Last thing is this. What's the last part of the verse? It says to what? To bring your kid up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Raise your family up in the Lord. And so fathers, here's what we're called to do. The discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. Do you lead with, hey, the root of all of this comes from the Lord? And do you do that not only with your actions, but with your words? What if we had fathers who said, I know we've been going to this Westtown church for about 2 years now, and I just want you to know, we're about ready to get out of this car and walk into the sanctuary here. The reason that we do this is because as a father, I need to be filled up with the Word of God, and I need to sing praises to Him, and I need to pray with Him, and I need to do it with you guys next to me, and I need to do it with you guys next to me and other families in our community. I need to see that because that builds me up. And that builds our family's faith up when we know we're connected to other families' faith. And we look around the room and we see these families that we've been doing life with for the past 5 and 10 years. The Bible calls it the church. And when the church stays together, we're stronger not only from the world, but we're stronger witnesses to the world. And when you do that well, when we do that well as the Taylors or the Van Oost or the whatever name of your family, God will use it. But many fathers don't ever make these connections. You never verbally say, let's go to the slide, leading with your faith, both verbally and non-verbally. Lots of fathers will, maybe some of them will say things, but never back it up. We're going to start going to church this year. And after week three, whatever. It's not backed with actions. We're going to start reading the Bible as a family. We're going to start praying as a family. And that stuff isn't followed through with. Or some of you are very disciplined in your actions, but you never connect the actions to your walk with the Lord verbally. And I know I needed that. When I watched my father do certain things for the Lord, I sometimes, as a kid, didn't make that connection. And so I think it's important for you as a father to make the connection. This is why this is so important. Not just to do it. Here's why. Here's the inner. But that means you have to know and nuance your faith. You have to know more about it. When Paul talks about this, when it says, children, obey your parents, honor your father and mother, fathers, don't exasperate your kids. When that is heeded and applied, what does it feel like to walk into the home of one of these families? No one's going to get this perfect, but when you know they're fighting for it, what does it feel like, literally, when you walk in and you're sitting in their family room? When you hear the jokes, the joy, and the weight of faith in the same family room. A dad that can be sarcastic, yet very intentional about his faith. A mom who's loving and caring, but will discipline her kid no matter what. When you see a kid who has something to say and he says it, but if the father says, wait a second, he shuts up and honors what his father asked them to do. I mean, and then they can tackle and wrestle each other, and they can still, the parents can still show them discipline. To me, that's a free home. To me, that's a trophy home for a Christian. And when you're around those homes, man, I believe you are light. Because here's what I hear in my office. Frank, in our family, it's like this. And you know, there's this so-and-so family that when I went to their house, it was just different. And I loved it. It was free. It was right, but there was strength and boundary and fun and goodness. And the father didn't exasperate the kids, and the kids honored the father. Dads, what if we just went after building these types of homes? What if church homes, we became individual homes as a church, right, comprised of these types of dynamics, these balances that Paul's talking about here? Tell me you wouldn't be used. Tell me your kids' friends wouldn't want to come over to your house all the time and just be like, I just want to be around this home. Because generally speaking, their dad was either General Patton, right, who just barked orders, or their dad was a pushover and did whatever the kids wanted. And we're not either one of those. We're right in here. And we do that because Jesus God the Father gave us what? This dignified responsibility. I mean, God the Father spoke to his son before Jesus did one miracle or preached one sermon. And he just looked down and he said to his son, this is my son with whom I am well pleased. And then the son at the end of those 3 years looked up at his dad and said, please, don't make me walk down this road, the Via Dolorosa, to the cross. And the father says, no. You got to do it. You're taking the sins of the world. You're the scapegoat. I love them, and you're the scapegoat. Go, do your job. Now, I know you don't want to drink this. And so what did a good son do? He obeyed his father, right? And his father honored, right? He loved us so much that he sent his son to die for us. That's how much he loves us. So dads, where are you? Use this as a diagnostic tool. Use this to diagnose where you are, what you can work on. And you don't have to do it perfectly. We know the cross gives us freedom to not do it perfectly. But when you do it well, because you want to be a great dad, when you do it well and you give it to the Lord and you pray, He's going to respond. He's going to transform your heart. And I believe here at West Elm, we're going to make homes that are going to change the world. Amen? I mean, we want to be a part of this. We want to create homes like this. Paul was so intentional about the home, about fathers. Hey, families, honor them today. It's hard being a dad. It is so hard. You want to be strong. And then you just want to be strong, but you have to be soft. And then you just want to be soft when you have to be strong. And man, to do that and to do that well, we need Jesus. Pray for us that we will have the power of the Spirit inside of us so that we can be what we need to be for this world. Let's pray and let's ask God to be with our fathers and our families. God, we thank you. There are up and coming fathers in this room, God. And may they take this passage and say, okay, in prep for being maybe a husband one day or a father one day, I need to work on this. God, there are fathers in this home who have beautiful amounts of strength, and that is so good for their sons and daughters, but it's been too much. And they need to respond with a little bit more love and softness. And then there are fathers in this room, God, that they show so much care and so much softness that, God, it's hard for them to discipline. And I would ask that you would create in them a strength. Thank you for being the perfect balance between the two. God, you know in my own life where I struggle, places where I'm way too strong or I'm way too soft. Continue to chasten me, discipline me, God. Help me dialogue with you as my father about what it means to love my family, my kids well. Thank you for the families in here that fight for this. Thank you that they are examples to me, what it means to be a father of a great home. And God, make our homes great for you and for your glory in your name. Amen.